Cannabis Podcast. Today we have another guest I'm very excited to have, Dante, a farmer Don, a grower and a farmer and a veteran I've known for many years. Very excited to have you here.
Thanks for welcome.
Yeah.
Great having you here. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey? What got you started in cannabis?
So, there's a lot, actually. Well,
let's start in the beginning, because I know you're actually from Oakland, but then you moved to the mountain and you moved around a lot. So let's talk about just about your background a little bit. Where are you from, and how did you get from Oakland up there and all that stuff?
So my mom was, we lived down here. She was with my dad. My dad's from out here. My mom's from Texas originally. Mm-hmm. And so it was rough, you know, childhood, dad, mom having some beef, you know what I mean? Mom having to leave. And we got on a Greyhound bus to go north, and as a kid stopping place to place, you know what I mean, on Greyhound, it seemed like a real long ride. So I was like, mom, let's get off here. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being Ukiah, Mendocino County. We got, she listened to me and got off the bus, and it was a lady from, Project Sanctuary, that was there, like a counselor, and saw that we needed help. And you know, that's how I got to Ukiah. We lived in the homeless shelter for a little bit, and then, you know, started to, like, from that program, there was, you know, things in place to help her out to get on our feet, and got an apartment and started working and things like that. So, it's been a journey. My mom had me at 16, so.
So you actually went up to Mendo not with the, knowing nothing about weed because you're a child. You just went up there to live, and then you kind of grew up there, and then kind of grew into the business as it was up there, kind of a thing.
Yeah. So like we, my dad down here, you know, he was always like the weed dude back in high school. You know what I mean? And doing his thing here, and had my mom doing it with, you know what I mean, here. So then, at a young age, my mom had me at a young age, and she's young herself, like. It was kind of hard to find out what it is that she was going to do. So, you know, she kind of like did that as well up there.
Cause you already knew it.
She already knew it. Right. And then, some things happened with, she got with, my stepdad at the time, and he was from LA. So then they started to like, she kind of fell into that same thing where she was doing it with him up there. And, you know, and, if you've been up there, it's kind of, you know, back then in like the '80s, you know, early late
80s. Very few of us up there.
Right, yeah. And that was like the temperature up there. Everybody's like doing that. So she then got, you know, busted up there and had to get escorted out of Ukiah. So then that's when I moved down to Sonoma County to get away from all of that, you know. Lived down in Sonoma County, went to a school at El Molino High School. In Forestville. So I kind of always been out in the woods and living out in rural areas, you know what I mean?
When you were a kid, when your mom was working in cannabis, did you touch the plant at all? Did you have any interaction with it? Or you just, your mom was just at work and you were just being a kid doing kid stuff?
Yeah, just at you know, doing kid stuff. She's at work doing her thing. It was always like plants was always around, though. You know, she's always had a green thumb and still right now she has like house plants and things like that. So like it's always been there.
So it was more about horticulture than really cannabis. It's just she was, had a green thumb. She loved growing. So you were immersed in that, but not focused just on cannabis.
Yeah. We grew tomatoes and cantaloupe and different things too.
Awesome. You know, real farming.
Yeah. And that's how I started actually, just growing veggies and cucumbers, squash and things like that and perfecting the soil really. Cause we're, you know, living off the land, you kind of have to have the know-how in the soil to make sure that soil is good. But then also it's like cutting food costs.
Yeah.
You know, so, having low funds to make ends meet with finances
it's been good. The sound's been going in and out.
Oh, okay.
All right, just get up on it.
Oh, okay. Get way closer. Okay. What about? Sorry about that.
It's okay, bro. Hey, bro. Don't stress.
Yeah.
Like literally, don't stress. Don't stress. You're fucking awesome. Like you have so much to say. You have so much of a story. And motherfuckers are gonna be lit. Yeah, don't worry about it. Pause. Okay, cool. They're going to be flicking that lighter. You know what I'm saying? So just tell your story like you have nothing to worry about.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, just start back up like, you know, how you were doing just cutting food costs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so my mom had to, like, you know, find ways to, like, cut some food costs and things like that. We were getting welfare with the food stamps out of the little paper, right? So I was always the one tending to the garden, tending to the soil. I lived in a town called Monterio, where we had to, it was like redwood trees everywhere, you know? So we had to, I had to like make sure that we had wood for the winters. You know what I mean? We had a wood burning stove. And so I had to learn how to like start a fire. And then, you know, my mom and stepdad at the time worked in Sonoma. So they're commuting from Monterio to Sonoma Developmental Center is where she started working once we left Ukiah. And then, so I just held down the fort while, you know, she's working all day, went to school. I was like the older brother. I have two sisters.
Okay. So you're just taking care of the,
I'm just holding your siblings. Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. So did you try cannabis back then or did that come later? Because I know that area is so saturated with
it. I think the first time I tried cannabis, I was in like eighth grade, seventh grade, out of an apple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The original pipe,
yeah, you know. And it didn't do nothing to me, you know. Still now, cannabis, like when I smoke, it like some people, they get couch lock or, I know that there's sativa and indicas, right? But like indica or sativa doesn't matter. I'm up. It's like coffee. You know what I'm saying?
So you're dealing with that in high school. And I know you wound up going into the military. So how did you transition from just being up north to the military?
So, when I graduated from high school, I went back up to Ukiah. So when we left there, I was like, man, I want to go back up there, you know? So I went to Mendocino Junior College and played football and basketball up there. Tried to go play ball at UCLA, football anyway, and it didn't work out, so I had to figure something out, you know. I started working at a place called Adeco where I was like a stent, I would weld for stents, and then my mom was like, you got to do something else, like, you know what I mean?
Something with your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a good mom.
So I went to the military and in 2000. And then got stop laws in 2003.
So where you had to stay in because of the war and you had to stay
exactly.
longer.
Got stop laws, went overseas, and then got out of the military and started working at a group home. And from there, it was...
All right, excellent. You were mentioning that you went into the service. What was your motivation to go into the service and what was that like?
So my motivation to get in the service was... a buddy of mine, a good friend, he's like a brother, Brett Rodden. We were supposed to go to the Air Force together. We took the test and he actually passed the test to get in. And then my test scores wasn't high enough, to do the job that we were going to do like the buddy system. So then I went to the Army and, it fit me actually better going into, the Army, you know. So that's how I got in. And then at the end of college, I needed something to do. So that's how I got in there.
So you said that you were deployed overseas, so you're a combat veteran?
Yeah.
So what was that like having grown up and seeing, like, because poverty, there's poverty in Oakland.
Right.
There's poverty on the mountain, which was actually, like, legit. People don't realize how bad it is that for a lot of people. Not everyone has running water, wood burning stoves and all that. But then to see poverty, like, overseas, like, what were some of the differences you saw in that?
Oh, so the ghettos here compared to the ghettos there, right, it's this night and day difference. We have it pretty good, you know what I'm saying, when it comes to, like, running water and paved roads and, you know, I mean, we got our problems and every place does, but it's a whole nother, it's a third world country is just different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a dictatorship, too.
Did serving over there change your perspective about home when you came back home? Or I guess it obviously did, but how did it change your perspective?
So I would say that if I could go to the military and do all the wild things that I did in the military for the country and things like that, when I got out, I was like, what can I do for myself? Like, you know what I mean? How do I make what I'm trying to do better? And, you know, I have two kids. So I was like, how do I want to be able to leave something for my kids and, you know, things like that. So it was a big motivator actually for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what was that transition like coming back home, and how did it transition home into cannabis? Was it directly into cannabis? Because it sounded like you weren't a big smoker before then. So no. What were the steps that you took?
So yeah, when I got out of the military, I went to a place called Willow Creek Treatment Center, and I was a residential counselor for group home kids. Mm-hmm. And I just pretty much used some of the basic training and things like that that I learned in the military to help the kids that at the group home, mm-hmm. and which was really good for them. And then, you know, that kind of, I did that, you know, for a little bit. And then, I was, gotta love the Oakland train.
Town business.
Yeah. I did that. And, I met my ex-wife, where, you know, my kid's mom, mm-hmm. and she lived up in Ukiah. And, I lived in Santa Rosa at that time when I got out of the military and stayed with my sister. And her husband, mm-hmm. and then from there I met my ex-wife, and then I stayed up there and got a place and had my daughter, and you know, and kind of like from there it evolved. I worked at the post office. Mm-hmm. In 2008 I got let go at the post office with the recession. Mm-hmm. Went back to school, and pretty much I was working at the post office and growing weed, and you know what I mean. It was like, if you weren't doing it, like what was wrong with you?
Yeah, well, especially up there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So were you consuming by then?
Yeah, for sure.
How did you, because you're saying you didn't really smoke when you were younger, so how did consumption start?
I, getting out of the military, I had some PTSD and mm-hmm. had a hard time sleeping, and still kind of have a hard time sleeping. So I used the cannabis to help me sleep. And when, you know, anxiety or like things get overwhelmed, I kind of take a couple puffs and then just like relax a little bit. And that's how it really helped me out, in that way. So like cannabis, sativa, indica, right? Like mm-hmm. I stay up on both of those strains, right? But when I'm actually coming down, I like pass out, mm-hmm. and it stops the dreams from happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then I can actually get a good rest.
Yeah, that's heavy. That's heavy. I know a lot of vets who are using cannabis to kind of deal with PTSD, and it's a real serious issue.
Yeah, it really is. For a long time too. So you have to be discreet about it, right? Because it, you know, it wasn't legal. And if you got caught, you know, using it or whatever, then let's say you got disability from the military, they would take your disability away. And that's like, you know, that's your livelihood a little bit, you know, you're having a hard time adjusting back to civilization and getting into the world again from transitioning from the military.
Yeah, it seems brutal. It kind of forces them to take like more aggressive drugs to treat what they're dealing with, and those drugs obviously have much worse side effects. So
right, for sure.
So when did you transition to just kind of loosely growing, like as you're with another job, to actually having your own company and stepping out into the legal market?
So I started So I have Farmer Don and Farmer Don Services, mm-hmm. and Farmer Don Services, when things was getting legal, I just know how to like, I work construction a lot and did a lot of things. So I knew about irrigation. I knew about electrical and different things like that. And, you know, farming is more than just the plant. You got to like be able to utilize the resources, recyclables to like make things work for you. And so I was good at that. Mm-hmm. And so I would go set up people's grows and different things like that. So I, the biggest grow I did was, out in Lake County. It was, 4 acres. I helped set that up.
That's serious.
And did the irrigation and helped out with that. And then I got called back to help harvest, and, you know, so then I had to hire some people to come out and help us harvest. And, that was from there. I knew that, like, you know, the market is going to be flooded with all this cannabis, like, mm-hmm. you know, so everybody's doing it. I got like a crew over here building a grow. I got another crew over here building a grow. Right. And then I'm over here at another spot helping them guys. So like, I was like, where's all this weed going? You know what I mean? I knew that the bottom was going to drop out. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, I'm going to wait mm-hmm. when the market is flooded. And then when the price of the weed is down, that's when I was going to get into it. So I got in when the price of weed was low and trying to ride the wave on the way up.
How's it been?
It's been challenging, actually. It's been really challenging. Like the the laws is a little challenging for people that don't have land and wasn't, you know, don't have fund financial backing and, you know, the licenses, like if you're white labeling, it's rough. You know what I mean? I would say that like there needs to be some type of, I don't know if union is the right thing, but there needs to be something for farmer workers and different things like that in the cannabis space to like help out, you know, help farmers out even, you know. But then also the supply chain or the distribution channels, right? Getting paid on time from the dispensaries is an issue, you know.
It's a huge issue.
Back in the day before it was legal, we didn't have those problems. It was like COD.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I miss that.
Bricks
of cash going home.
For sure. COD. And if you didn't have it or you were like real tight, close, you know, friends, then you would let it roll for a little bit, right? And get your pay, right? But now it's just you got a lot of guys coming in with suit and ties, like, oh, I know how to do this and I did this business for X amount of years, so I'm gonna come in and do this in cannabis and it's gonna work the same way, but it doesn't work like that. You got a bunch of, like, I don't want to use the word outlaw, but you got a bunch of people that was going against the grain.
Renegades.
And then you want them to now follow suit on the way you use the way these, you know, suit and tie guy, corporate guys is coming in to like have it run a certain way. And it's just like, it's kind of messed up.
It's a mess. Yeah. I know. I've seen a bunch of your products around. I think what I'm most familiar with are your rose joints, the joints that you have rolled with rose petals. Where'd you come up with that idea and how did that happen?
So, I was out in LA, and I was with a guy that was trying to raise money for his own brand. And, he had like a mixer kind of party at some house up in the hills. And I met a guy named Josh Hamblin, and he had it, and he was showcasing. Everybody was kind of like showcasing their products at this house, and he had it, and I was like, "Wow, this is next level right here." But he didn't have it all. Like, I'm a perfectionist a little bit, and he didn't have it all the way dialed in, you know, the way I would have liked it. So I helped him out with, like, you know, changing some paper and changing some things up, and then. That's how that came about, you know? It's so I'm actually going to be growing my own and doing my own thing with that now.
Growing your own roses in addition to the flower.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Cause I know you've been growing flower forever, but to see you actually grow the roses that
we're going to turn that up. There's some things coming. I got some banana leaf and different things coming.
That's excellent. So, you've lived in different environments that weren't necessarily black. I mean, being on the mountain obviously isn't black. And actually coming from a black area and then transitioning to the mountain and then from the mountain to the military, all these environments were not as well culturally represented. What was that experience like for you? Let's start with going up north. What was it like leaving West Oakland and then going up north, that tradition of all black West Oakland to Lily White Mountain?
I didn't know that I was black until I went up there and heard the word nigger, right? In the way that they say it, like, you know what I'm saying? I remember me and my mom crossing the street and the dude in the big old truck was like, "Hey, get out of the road, nigger," right? And I'm like, "What was," and my mom reacting to it, right? And so then I'm like, okay, that wasn't good. Like, you know, so, and then going to school and then having the kids say it, right? And then, coming from Oakland and seeing all the violence in the hood, you know, I was a kid like that was afraid of, like, I didn't want to do the things that I seen in the hood to these people that was like calling me nigger, right? Until it was like the kid called me a nigger and then punched me in the face, right? I'm like, oh wait, this is we got to draw a line here somewhere, right? So now I'm like, okay, it's time for me to get busy, you know what I mean? So after a while you get in a couple scuffs and things change.
Do you feel like as you're up there, it became like less of an issue that you were black, or like there was a more diversity happening over time, or you felt like you're still in this like really all white environment and kind of dealing with racism because of that?
I think I've been up there long enough now that like people know who I am and know what I'm about and my morals and values and things like that. You know what I mean? So, you know, I would say to some other, you know, other black people that want to move up there or be around in it, like, first of all, don't be flashy, right? You know what I mean? just stay incognito is what I call it, right? Stay incognito and just fly on the radar and just, you know, just be simple. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. I'm like that anyways. So it's just natural for me. At one point when, you know, you're making like, you know, $2,100 to $3,500 a pound, you want to splurge a little bit and learning about financial literacy and buying certain things, right? You know what I mean? What to buy, what not to buy. Like, so I went through the phase of like buying cars and shit, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And getting pulled over all the time and learning that, like, you know what I mean? What they say, don't outshine the master in his face.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. You know what I mean?
So do that shit out of town, mm-hmm. you know?
What, so I guess it's a similar experience in the military. You go to the military. It's not, I guess there's more diversity in the military now though. So it's not as much of that. So did you feel like you were leaving like a white environment and going to a more diverse environment, or was where you're at in the military also kind of like not a lot of brown folks?
No, there was black people in the military. Excellent. Yeah. When I was in my unit anyway,
I just remember because my cousin was a Ranger too, and he was saying like in the military it was a lot of diversity, but when he actually got to Ranger school and kind of got in that kind of class of soldier, so much less of us, and then kind of went back to not a level of racism, but so many of the folks that were in those units were very country, so it kind of like he's from D.C., he has one experience, and then he's in special forces, and there's like a whole other community that you're kind of enveloped.
Yeah, in. So you have the big army, and then you got the little army, and that's more like the little army. And yeah, there isn't a lot of black people in that shit. You gotta, you know, I don't know how to, you gotta be cut from a different cloth to do that. You know what I mean? And handle some of that and be strong mentally. Mm-hmm. Right. There's a guy, that stands out to me that was like calling me racist things to keep me to go. Cause he's like, you either have it or you don't. Like you can take the criticism and use that as you're getting mad to complete the course, or you can let it defeat you. You know what I mean? And so he saw that it would just like fuel me, you know what I mean? So I was crushing it, man.
Nice.
Like, I just used that to help me get through. And so like as a kid too, you know, dealing with, the traumas and, you know, coming from, like I said, my mom had me when she was young. So we're both young, you know? And so coming through all the traumas and having a lot of anger and built up tension, it was a really good outlet for me, to go to the military, to like let some of that stuff out, be around other men. Right.
Absolutely.
And get some of that mentorship from other men and, some guidance that I didn't have, you know,
it's really important.
So help me out.
It's awesome. So, as you've been in the how long have you been in the legal cannabis industry now? I've known you forever.
I started in 2018, mm-hmm. but I've been growing cannabis for about 16, 17 years.
Okay. How do you feel that your cultural background has impacted like the work that you do? Like anything about your family or ethnicity or how do you feel like what unique do you feel like being black has brought to you in the business?
I don't know. Like, you know, I try to like, I just get after it, man. I try not to like let the color, because it's always that we, you know, born this way, you're always dealing with it. So it's like, you know, I would say the military helped me in those ways because there's like places that most people don't go, right? I'm going, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I'm not afraid to go, to like make the money, right? So like when you're living in a rural area, you don't have no shopping malls and different things to make money. You know what I mean? So you're either gonna like be on the street or you're gonna figure out what other people are doing in the area that's making it happen. So, you know, I've always been a go-getter to like make it happen, just cause.
Got to.
You gotta make it happen, you know?
Yeah. What do you think are some of the biggest hurdles that small business people are facing in legal cannabis right now? Regardless of what ethnic background they come from, just the general, the horrors of being an entrepreneur in this current space.
Whew, there's a lot. So I would say, finances is one, but then also having, you know, if you don't have a license or the resources to have land, then, you know, it's pretty going to be pretty hard for you. That's another reason why I launched my brand when the market had crashed, mm-hmm. it was like $200 for a pound, $350 for a pound. Wow. It just made sense to do that. But now as the prices are starting to climb a little bit, so like if you're white labeling, you don't have a license, it's just going to be that much harder for you to make money out of it to meet your margins. You
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely. How have you dealt with, I know with a lot of folks, some of our biggest hassles are like banking and accounting and things like that. How have you tackled that? Or what have you been experiences trying to deal with banks and accounting and the legal side of things?
Man, that's been a battle. So learning about like your profit and loss statements and knowing what money's coming in, what money's going out, balancing your books. A lot of people don't even have bank accounts.
Yeah. Well, I know most like, of you couldn't get them. And if you did, they would close them every 6 months or something
right,
like that.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, and then having the right LLC set up. Yeah. So that way when you're putting money in the bank, it doesn't look like you're fraudulent. Right. You got some type of protection to put, you know, to make it look legitimate. Right. Mm-hmm. I owned a barbershop in town. Mm-hmm. So I was making money on that and saving money. I've always been tight with my money anyways. Mm-hmm. So having that barbershop helped me learn about business.
Yeah.
So then, and then going to the bank regularly at the end of the day, you know, putting money in the bank. So after cutting hair. So that kind of helped me understand the accounting side of it and mm-hmm. keeping books. So when it was time for me to launch cannabis, you know, the brand, I was kind of like, I had an idea. Mm-hmm. The things that I will say though, for new people getting in the game, the accountant that you pick is vital.
Yes.
Because even though you like, yeah, I got an accountant, but that accountant can be doing things that's costing you money. Mm-hmm. So I've had my account frozen mm-hmm. for like, you know, either A, not paying the taxes, not knowing when the deadline was mm-hmm. just because, you know, they don't teach this in school yeah. or the accountant not lacing me up in a way to where, you know, giving me the service that, you know, to help me out as a client to make sure that I'm on point. I've had some setbacks and it's serious, you know?
Yeah. But I think both lawyers and accountants, like they're worth their weight in gold, but they take all the gold.
Yeah. So. I think like it's four people that you need to always pay. That's your lawyer, your accountant, your plumber, and your dentist. Yeah.
Yes. Definitely right? the dentist. You said you don't smoke much, but what are some of your favorite methods of consumption? Do you smoke, edibles, topicals, tinctures? What if you're going to consume it, what is your preferred method?
I prefer like the old school sneak-a-toke, right? The little pipe, right? Sneak-a-toke pipe. Just because I like to try my flower as the flower is curing. Mm-hmm. I want to try it through all the different stages. Mm-hmm. So then that way I'm like, okay, this, it's like a plum, right? You eat a plum, you're like, oh, right, this is really sweet plum. Or you pick it when it's a little bit tart with a little bit of sweetness into it, right? So I try to taste it throughout that whole process to know, okay, now's the time to.
Where's the sweet spot?
Yeah. Oh, I love awesome. That. And so like during harvest is when I smoke the most. I'm like.
Gotta try everything.
Every day.
I love it. What are some of the other brands that you're familiar with that you're excited about? I know we're all part of the Equity Trade Network. We're all part of a small community. Are there some other brands that you've been watching, eyeing, that you're really excited about the work that they're doing?
Yeah, so you're one of them, the Oakland Extracts, right? I think you gave me, because I was always like skeptical on the how the process is made to like extraction for the, you know, the sauce, the live rosin, and all the different things, right? So, like, I know at one point it was like butane and all this other stuff to make it right, and trying to learn that process. So I was like, I'm not really down with you guys add some butane to extract this to then do that. So I was like, nah, I don't know about that. But then when I met you and you gave me one of your pens, I was like, oh yeah, it was all sativa too. Yeah. Oh, I'm a sativa dog boy.
Yeah, we got some Congo for you to go home with. Yeah. It's really nice sativa. Yeah. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, I also like clarified too.
Love clarified. Yeah,
clarified is legit. Yeah. Like I always say, clarified is bona fide.
Yeah, they're some of my favorite edibles. Yeah, they're old school. They've been around forever. Oh, yeah, they make butter with hash. Make ghee with hash.
What that 100 milligram cookie? Woo.
Yeah, that molasses one does me. That's damage.
Watch out. Watch out.
Why it's worth anything else, but I love that one. So what does the future hold for you and your brand? Like if you could control how things are going, where would things go for you? Where would you go? Where would the brand grow? How would you pivot? What would you be doing in this space, assuming the market kind of rights itself and you're able to stay here?
I would like to just get the farm dialed in a way to where I could have like, you know, cannabis tours and, you know, living where I live out, I know a bunch of winery owners and try to like, you know, it's all coming, you know, weed and wine and
yeah, you have more and more folks live are doing shows. It'd be great to see a black farm doing just so people can see like a different slice of it. Since so many of us don't feel comfortable on that mountain, to be able to go to that mountain and see us up there would be
for
massive.
For sure. Yeah, that's exactly what you're saying. Like, I would love to have our people from the Bay come up, do some shows, and then integrate the people that I know there. Because there's a, like, so, like, you know, I don't want to come off and be like, oh, yeah, it's racism. Like, but it's there's some really good people up where I live at. You know what I mean? So, like, being able to merge those two communities together, because realistically, right, you got a bunch of farmers up there. And you got a bunch of people down here trying to either farm or white label product, right? So if we can bridge the gap and have those two people come together, they get it at a, you're getting the cannabis at a good price. Mm-hmm. You're helping them out, right? I think that that would be a good blend.
That'd be beautiful because I know a lot of the smaller brands that are just white labeling or just buying product from existing farmers that put in their jars, they're buying it from some of these local, more corporate farms.
Right.
So the idea of being able to go up north, deal with the real mom and pop, people who've been in this business for 20 plus years, real legacy growers,
right,
makes all the difference, especially the quality. I mean, the quality of someone who's been growing it for years versus someone who's just got a mega farm, hydro, salts, all that BS, it's not the same.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get the real, like, and then also you have like the THC percentage, right? Yeah. So like everybody's like, this is 30% and this is right, man. There's some 19% product out there that will knock you out.
Oh man. I remember the old school 11% purple Kush that puts you to sleep before you finish the joint. And there's like no real indica left anymore. So all these 38% indicas are doing nothing compared to those things.
For sure.
So,
for sure. So like, and you know, there's some good weed out there. You know what I mean? You got good cannabis out there. And the Emerald Triangle is where I live at. So like, that's like the champagne of cannabis, if you will. You know what I mean? Absolutely. I just wish our county would get on board with some of that because really like the tourism it. and the things that the county could make money, a shit ton of money doing it the right way, that actually has people coming up there and providing tourism and, you know, farmers getting to meet some of the people down here to actually have those relationships happen, I think, is definitely needed.
Absolutely. Would you ever move down here or are you going to stay up there? You feel like?
No, they bip too much down here.
Yeah. There's a lot of break-ins. There's a lot of random crimes.
Like, I can't do it. I'd hurt somebody. I couldn't do it. I like, you know, so like, here's the thing. We hear the train, right?
Yeah.
That train's going to go about around, you know, daily. If I'm trying to sleep, I don't want to hear trains. Yeah. I don't want to hear the traffic. Yeah. I don't want to hear the sirens, right? You know what I mean? I already have a hard time sleeping. So when I'm asleep, I want to be asleep, you know? And then also when people are sleeping, your body, you're in a vulnerable state, right? You could get crept up on, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? You can get robbed. Like, so I live in a place where it's like peaceful, it's quiet. You know, if you are in the area at a certain time of night, you stick out, right? You know what I mean? I got two big Akitas, so you're not really
coming on the property.
Yeah, you're not really doing that.
I have a lot of veteran friends who moved out of the city just because of that, just the noise and just the feeling of tension.
Yeah,
they really needed something more relaxed, something different. And I think that's one of the great things about growing for veterans. I know a lot of veterans who are growers, and it allows them the opportunity to be on land by themselves, to kind of have their own schedule, maintain their discipline, but have a little bit of freedom and grow their own medicine and bring their own income in. And so you're a vet. I know you have a lot of other vet friends. How have you seen the business of cannabis be useful for veterans?
Oh, just like you said, like being out in the woods and being, you know, feeling the, getting away from all the high anxiety and the tension and all the hustle bustle and all the things that, so for me as a veteran, I need to keep track of things, right? So if I'm in a big city, I think we were outside and a dude was walking by, we were talking, I couldn't even finish my conversation because I'm like,
tracking him the whole
time.
What
are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
And so, what's that in your hand? I saw you eyeballing like every little thing.
Yeah. So like so being out in the woods is like, kind of like my senses are down a little bit. I'm worried about a mountain lion or a bear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we could deal with, I'd rather deal with that than some human that's strung out on something in China.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I'm going to get in trouble.
So. Yeah.
I think that that's really where it's at for the veterans to like take the cannabis to be able to relax mm-hmm. and lower the census, you know.
Have you interacted with any of the veterans cannabis groups that are out there, Weed for Warriors or Operation EVAC or any of these other programs where they're trying to get vets in the industry or collaborate with them at all?
So I would like to do that. I welcome that. I haven't, just because there's so much that I'm trying to maintain and do, get the brand off the ground and make sure that I'm doing right. Plus, like, you know, with the roses, that was a lot of energy just to get it on the shelf and lost some money. So I've been trying to like stay afloat so that way I can go and do, I feel like I can't help anybody else or get into those realms until I get all my things.
To help yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta put your oxygen mask on first.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that definitely makes a lot of sense, but I definitely know Weed for Warriors and Operation EVAC. Would love to have you come in and talk to some of the other vets, because not only have you successfully just transitioned and adapted from being a combat vet back to the U.S., but to not just consume cannabis, but to be in the market creating products and being self-sufficient. I think that's a story a lot of the vets would really appreciate hearing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it. I think now where I'm at is it's time to start doing some of those things.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that actually helps the brand go, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it will, because I think a lot of these organizations have great relationships with clubs and sort of dispensaries. And so the dispensaries are always looking for other products that either support veteran communities or are part of the veteran community. So right. Then being able to spread the message, hey, this is another veteran brand. And I know they're like, they're really strong in Santa Cruz and a little strong in areas that are a little bit more rural. I mean, right. The city cares too, but people in the country care more because so much, many more of them have served and their families are part of that. So,
yeah, it's something I definitely need to look into a little bit more.
No, we'll plug you into some people. We'll get it done.
That's what's up.
Right on. Yeah. So, thanks for having you here. It's an honor to have you here. Just off from what we're talking about, separate from the podcast, but just as a business owner who is constantly struggling, seeing you and how hard you work is always super inspiring. Whenever you're at an event, knowing that you drove off the mountain, you got kids up there, you got so many things going on, but you're still grinding so hard that when I'm sitting here, no kids, just me and my dog, feeling like bad for myself, it's like, bro, you're fucking lazy. And so I really appreciate your work ethic and what you've been doing in the space and the dope hoodie that I'm about to throw on as soon as we're out of here. And so I appreciate you being here, bud.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. I think we wrapped up a little.
Did we go over?
Keep going a little bit. Keep going.
Oh, okay.
Just so I can use this as filler, just for that other.
Oh, okay.
I had some random questions I didn't ask because I haven't figured out an effective way to ask them. But like, especially with Black and Brown folks, I'm always like curious about your grandparents because I feel like so many of us, that elder generation really helped form who 100%. We are. So who helped form who you are as a man?
So my granddaddy, my family's from the South, originally moved here. So we call him Granddaddy, Big Daddy, Big Mama, right?
Yeah.
My granddaddy helped my big daddy run a ranch out in Manteca. My big daddy owned some property out there. So I would go out and pick peaches and cherries and put them in a basket because we had a fruit stand out there. And then he would always, like, he had an old school Ford truck, right? Cowboy hat, the whole nine, you know? So he was my influence in me being comfortable in that country setting. Whenever we were going out to Manteca, we'd be like, living here, we'd be like, oh, we're going to the country. You know what I mean? So when we started headed north with me and my mom, I started to see like, oh, this looks like the country.
Yeah.
So I told my mom, let's get off here.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? This looks familiar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of how that all happened. And then it started with my granddaddy, James Graham.
That's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I kind of threw that together, so I'd be happy to.
You're kind of like, and bye.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's all good.
I just, like, I'd been searching for other questions. Like, fuck, the other times we ran so long, but this time I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
I didn't get a lot of sleep last night either, so I'm kind of running on fumes, but yeah, I got it. So you start now?
Ask a question and end it.
Okay, so ask another question, then Emma end it. Let me see what that, there's. That's what the future holds.
Ask that question again, actually, because I want to go more.
So I know you've been in the cannabis industry a long time, working really, really hard. What does the future hold for you and your brand?
Actually, I'm in the process now of trying to, like, rebrand. not changing everything and logos and things like that, but just like getting a better direction where I want to go, because I didn't really have any footing yet to mm-hmm. figure that out. This is all new. Mm-hmm. So I definitely would like to do the weed and wine and be more of a upper, I don't want to say upper echelon brand, like meaning like I don't want to be like the Budweiser. Yeah. I want to be smaller craft and not really like salts, a whole bunch yeah. of salts, more organic.
Absolutely.
It doesn't need to be like super, super crazy appealing looking, right? But you know that
quality.
Right? I would like to use cannabis to help propel other things that I want to do. So this is just a step, nice. You know, in the other things.
What are some of the other things?
So I really would like to build a tiny home community. Mm-hmm. I think our, you know, the homeless in our community is pretty bad.
Yeah.
And revamp the whole trailer park, mm-hmm. right? It needs a facelift.
Yeah.
Me having a construction background and knowing how to build and do all those things, that's kind of where my heart's at. And coming from a homeless woman shelter, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I'd like to do something in that way also. There's a bunch of like my mom working at Sonoma Developmental Center. Mm-hmm. There's some, when they shut that place down, they just put all those people out on the street.
Jesus.
Right. So I'd like to like do something in that way for the mentally ill, mm-hmm. you know, me having PTSD, like it's a real thing, you know, mm-hmm. so they need places to stay. And my town is pretty bad also, where like, you know, in the summer months, you're going to see, you know, you got to like be careful on how you're driving because they don't have any regard for crosswalks and different yeah. things like that. So there needs to be like some type of care for them. They're people at the yeah. end of the day. Right.
Absolutely.
So I like to, you know, use the brand to like use it as a stepping stone to go to the next level in that way.
Beautiful. Always serving your community.
100%.
That's awesome. Yeah. So thank you for being here. Really appreciate it. Big yeah. fan of your brand. Big fan of just knowing you. Like I said earlier, big inspiration for me. Whenever I feel like I'm working really hard, I look at you and I realize I'm not working hard enough at all. I've got to really bust ass. Almost a side note, I've been like wrestling with I need to get a job right now kind of thing because things are so lean. And I've been trying to wrap my brain around like, can I stop running my business and work for somebody else? And even though all the entrepreneurs say this is what you do, it's still like a little bit of an ego thing.
To your point, like I actually am working. So like right now I'm working for UPS.
Yeah, that's killer. That inspires the fuck out of me that you're like, no, I need to do this. So right. I am going to do this. And because of the why, you're telling me earlier, that's, I love
so
it.
So the why on that is so like if you're an entrepreneur mm-hmm. and you're like running thin, because that's where I'm at too, yeah. right? We're in this together, in this business together, right? So if you're running thin, so my outlook on it is like, okay, what is the problems in cannabis? And this one of them is distribution, mm-hmm. like, right? Getting payout, right? So I want to know, I picked the job where I'm like, okay, I'm in cannabis. This is a problem. Let me go find out who's doing it better. Like Amazon,
yeah.
getting a job at Amazon, getting a job at UPS or the post office, right? And find out how they do it. So then that way it's like, okay, I'm going to pick a distribution company that is doing it close to this.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, and get paid to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going to learn something and you're going to pay me and it's going to help my brand. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. And it's only for the holiday season. Yeah,
but it's still just the grit to do it. Just the idea that like I am a successful business person. I am doing all these other things, but then I'm going to go take this job so they can either further my education or further my 100%. Understanding or somehow, you know, support my business. It really kind of gave me more courage about my decisions. Like, okay, I'm not just giving up. This makes total sense. Cause someone I look up to for busting their butt all the time is showing right. me that this is a positive way to do it. So you're an inspiration to all of us.
I appreciate it. I appreciate yeah. it.
So again, thanks for being here. Look yeah, forward to having you again soon. And then we're going to go to the other spot and enjoy some of these roses and such, but thanks for being here, brother.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah.